Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And on my show today, I have Teresa Quinlan. Now, this is really interesting. Before I came on the show today, I asked Teresa, what's your title? And Teresa says that she finds titles quite a hard thing. And I was like, oh, wow, you're the first person that's come on my show to say it. But I just feel like it was great that she was open and honest from the beginning. So I gave Teresa the title Emotional Intelligence Teacher. But do you want to talk a little bit why the titles are, I don't know, important or not so important to you, what you feel about titles, Teresa?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an emotional response, visceral response, seemingly. You know, I live in that space quite a lot. And I feel often that because we define titles so strictly, giving a title then limits the individual, limits potentially what we can do, want to do, will do, limits the interaction, because then we think, oh, this person is only A, and then insert the title after that. And that kind of containment of our talents, our strengths, where we could go in a relationship, where we could go in a working relationship, gets that limitation attached to it. And I just find that, man, we're so much more than just the title. And I like the freedom that it offers if we just maybe put the title aside for a while.
Oh gosh, you know what? That's just absolutely perfect. I love what you've just said there. And it's triggered something in my mind in terms of feeling that sometimes titles is something that people define people of in the Western world, and also can sometimes create a certain judgment. And I love the way you said a judgment, or maybe you said emotional response, which I love that, because you do have an emotional response, and sometimes you may treat somebody different because of their titles. And it makes so much sense to me in terms of maybe just letting go of it, because in different parts of the world, I don't think there's so many different titles, and there's more that are coming out. And it's really made me think, actually, Teresa, about titles in a different way. So thank you for that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
But moving forward, I just want to ask you why emotional intelligence, or it might be an obvious question, but why emotional intelligence is so important to you?
It was important from a really young age. And this kind of reflection, of course, comes in my emotional intelligence journey. So it wasn't like when I was young, I understood the fullness of my experiences. The opportunity of tapping into my emotional intelligence, I started my personal journey at around age 24. It was the first time I had sort of a recognition around, I am not behaving in a way that I feel proud of. It's not connected to who I want to be. And seemingly it's emotional in its nature because I'm feeling it so strongly. Now, how do I fix that? And that's when I went into the bookstore and started reading and started my journey, and things started to shift. But when I look back now, and I think about when I was a kid and when I was growing up, my responses were intense. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to this, maybe even more so through their teenage years. Responses to other people, to situations, I recall them being so intense, so emotionally intense anytime, and especially anytime it was in conflict to a value or it was in conflict to what I believed was right.
Okay. So we're looking at, so what I want to know, because just when you say intensity, I want to know why intensity when you were young, and was it about justice? Was it because you felt strongly about things as a young person and you felt if there's an injustice, there's an intensity, or is it something else?
Yes, it was definitely related to intensity. Sometimes it was related to justice. I think that's a fair word to use. But more so, I believe it was because I felt that the rules and structure around me were counterproductive to me being me.
Brilliant. Yeah, I can see that. And I suppose that's what institutions do, isn't it?
Yeah, institutions do it for sure. But even just the parenting, like I'm a girl, and the rules around how my hair was supposed to be, the type of clothing I was supposed to wear, the activities I was allowed to be a part of, the messaging around as a girl you're supposed to, and I was just like, none of that feels right.
Wow. So would you say, so when you're talking, this has come from your parents in terms of, was it your mum or your father that wanted you to behave like a girl? Because this is really fascinating to me.
Oh, it was by far my mother.
Yeah. Oh, bless. Love you, mum. But, sometimes parents do that, don't they? They probably don't realize they're doing it. As I always say, it's always hard being a parent anyway. I always say, no matter what I do, my kids are probably going to need therapy anyway, so I just can get on. I always say, no matter what, because there'll always be something, won't they? You know, you'll always get something wrong. But what's interesting is like you say, is this whole perception of being a girl. And that hits home, actually, to me. Because I suppose I was brought up quite similar in terms of this is what a girl does and this is what a boy does. So tell me a little bit more about that. I want to hear a little bit more on that in terms of, give me an example of a time that you maybe felt very uncomfortable, you know, with the whole being a girl thing.
Yeah, the diary is rich, Tanya, so we can talk about quite a few of those. In all likelihood, several people listening, I'm sure will be able to, especially females listening, will be able to relate to being on the tomboyish side. So the resistance to things like, you know, my hair needed to be long. I was also like blonde, curly hair, fair-skinned, blue eyes, Italian-German family predominantly.
Okay.
And so looked nothing like my mother, who was darker skin, like olive complexion, very Mediterranean, olive complexion, hazel eyes, dark hair. And my older sister looked like my mother as well. So as the second child, my older sister was fine being girl-like, wearing dresses, playing with dolls. I was rough around the edges, and I liked getting dirty and playing sports, and I liked wearing pants. My God, I loved wearing pants, and I wanted my hair to be short because it was always in my way when I was trying to play, and I couldn't have those things. So I wore a dress most of the time to school and came home dirty because it didn't get in my way. I still played in it, and it felt like it was a constant battle to be like, can I please just wear pants? It'll be so much easier for me to slide into second base if I don't have to have like rocks and dirt coming up my underwear, basically. Yeah.
This is absolutely brilliant. And you know, it's almost like I'm picturing like looking like Shirley Temple, but really wanting to be like, whoa, I got to.
Yes.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. And you know what? This has really hit home for me as well, actually, because my daughter plays football. And so my daughter and my son, they both play football, but my daughter always comes home and within a week, her shoes are falling apart. And I'm like, oh my God, how come so I got to always keep buying shoes? I got to, everything's always falling apart, because she really throws herself into physical activity. She does. And I'm trying to learn, okay, that is just who she is, because I thought she's taken tomboy to another level, because I felt like I was a tomboy, but she's taken to another level. So it's so interesting to hear from your side, Shirley. I'm interviewing you, and there's a bit of the law of attraction here, someone showing me the other side, actually, like you say, you just wanting to feel free. And I can, I suppose, identify with that as well, and probably as a mum I could take ownership as, oh my God, maybe I need to just let her be freer, do you know, as well, to that sort of thing. So thank you for that as well. So there's always so much learning when people come together from both sides, I do believe.
A glimpse into it. And this is where the labeling became the problem for me, because that phrasing of, why don't you be more like a girl? And my response was generally vehement in its tone, and you know, so I got spanked quite a bit for it, but I would say, I am a girl.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what you're talking about. I am a girl. How can I be more like a girl? Yeah. I can't be more of that. Like, this is me as a girl. And perhaps the lingering impact of the labeling to say, well, you're not, even though I knew, but I am. So I don't know how to prove that to you. And do I need to prove that to you when whatever, like, nothing I do will prove it to you?
You know what? That's just perfect. Because it's like you say, you're born a girl. You've got a vagina. You're a girl. It's as simple as that. Yeah, I'm going to have to put explicit on this now. But yes, right? So it's the whole idea of perception at the end of the day, and perception of female and male. Do you feel now that things are changing with regard to that, or perceptions? What do you feel like in terms of living at this time, 2020? What do you feel? Have you, you know?
I think for some people, definitely it has. And for others, it definitely hasn't.
No, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. Some people are still set in their ways. So how does that play into emotional intelligence?
Well, the way I would respond to it when I was younger was not helpful to strengthening relationships. Yes. I would blurt things out with disdain. My mother would call it sass, and that would oftentimes push people away, as opposed to learning how to express myself with emotional intelligence, learning how to assert. I didn't assert, I was aggressive or passive aggressive. And understanding that balance between, well, can I understand their perspective a little bit more? Like, resisting me, I resisted trying to find out where someone was coming from, and instead felt people don't understand me. And so I needed to tell them about me and show them me and plant my feet really firmly. And so emotional intelligence gave me the skill set to understand how my emotions were driving my behavior. I didn't have to change the emotional response. I needed to change the understanding of the emotional response. Like, why did that bother me so much? And then learn to articulate it in a way that strengthened the relationship, that brought the two of us closer together, that allowed us to connect, that I understood them, they understood me. Neither of us were right nor wrong. We just were.
That's brilliant. So you kind of went through this whole time of this defense mechanism, and like you say, not being able to connect, and then you suddenly started to connect. Was there somebody who inspired you or called you out, so to speak, for you to embark on this journey?
There were several people who called me out just when I was ready to actually hear it.
So when did you hear it then? When did you kind of hear it?
I was 24 when I really started to take action on it. Okay. And it was at a family gathering, and my then sister's boyfriend had been exposed to me. He and I were friends. So he had seen me, but he had not seen me with my mother yet.
Yes.
And when he saw that, he had said to me, he's like, what is wrong with you when you're with your mom? And I had heard this before with other friends. He's like, your mom's so nice. Why are you kind of like an ass when you're around her. Like, you're so mean. I've never seen you like that before.
Yeah.
And time and again, I would simply just say, I don't know, like, I can't help myself. You know, you don't know her. She's like this when she's around other people, but when we're in the privacy of our own home and our own relationship, she's very different.
Yeah.
And when I was at this particular time, I had really heard it back from the perspective of, oh, I'm kind of really blaming her for everything. I probably can do something about it. I'm just choosing not to do something about it. And so I went to the bookstore and I found a book that was called Mama Drama. Kind of perfect. Yeah. And in it, in the first chapter, there were a couple of lines that just slapped me in the face. And one of them was, no one makes you feel anything, you choose. And that really was a turning point for me. Like, in that moment, completely turned a switch in my logical brain, which is where most of our EQ skills live. And then also the other line in it was, stop giving away all your power, which really played to my competitive personality type. And I was like, oh, there's motivation. So I had the switch turn and I had the motivation and drive to start doing differently. And that set me on the journey to more and more reading, which allowed me to try different things, especially when I was interacting with my mom. And it is a journey. Like, emotional intelligence isn't about reading one book and then all of a sudden, you know, you're better in how you behave. It takes time to unlearn. It takes time to challenge and debate the beliefs that amplify what you're feeling. It takes time to recognize all of your personal biases and judgments that are associated with them and begin to reprogram based on, you know, a more expansive look at what humanity really is.
Yeah, that's so true. I love the fact that you just said to unlearn, because as you said, there were certain conditions and certain behaviors which triggered you as a young person with your mother. And then you read this book, Mama Drama, and then you started to look at yourself. And I love what you said when you said, there's no one that makes you feel, no one that makes you do anything. You have the choice. You can make those choices. And also that very powerful word in terms of giving away your power, to stop giving away your power, is really, really strong. All really strong messages, Teresa, there. It sounds like you're on a journey. You're being very honest with yourself. And by coming to that point of honesty, you're able to release and move forward and do this amazing work that you're doing now. So what's a real highlight? So can I get like a real highlight of, you know, we've talked a little bit about some of the challenges that you've experienced. Has there been anything that's been really, really, really special where you thought, my God, I love doing this work with emotional intelligence? Has there been a real highlight for you?
It is hard to pick one.
Okay.
Because the experience of working with individuals, teams, organizations, there has never been a moment in emotional intelligence work where there hasn't been that sort of flood of, they got it. And you see someone's personal onion layers melting away, or they break free from a chain, or now they've seen something from a different perspective for the first time and you see the aha moment behind their eyes. And it is so, like, even just thinking about it in this moment and speaking about it, I get that lump in my throat that comes before I start crying.
Oh, bless you.
It's such meaningful and fulfilling work, because it frees people from the emotional turmoil that keeps them stuck in behaviors they don't want to be exhibiting. But because they feel stuck and they don't quite have it unlocked as to where does this come from, like, there's almost a sense of, I'm at the mercy of something I have no control over. And once they unlock the fact that they do have control and start to identify where it's coming from, their whole life begins to change. And more often than not, that first moment for people where they go, oh my gosh, I never thought about it like that before. That is the first step to everything being different for them. Everything. Mm. It's hard to turn away from that moment and not be different moving forward. And so even if that is at our last session together, even if it's taken 2-3 months for them to get there, I know that as soon as they're there, they've got it. Yeah. And they can run with it. And they don't really need me anymore, because I realize time and again that that is the like snap point for people to carry on their journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. And that's, wow, yeah. It sounds rewarding just listening to you, actually, and listening to you, because, you know, you said you can see it behind their eyes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even if you're a speaker or you're a teacher, not everybody has got that gift. But when you said that to me, I could see your gift, because mm-hmm. you're obviously able to be fully present when you're teaching. Like some people, they do inspiring speaking or they teach, and they may just see those people that are putting their hands up. But the fact that you said, I see it behind their eyes, means that you're connecting with that group and you're being present on a deeper level. And you're going on the journey with them. And for me, just listening to that sounds really powerful and makes me want to be in the same room as you for an emotional intelligence training. Because if you can connect with people in that way, then that's pretty powerful, Teresa. Yeah, thanks for sharing that with me. I'm going to bring it to a close, though. But before I bring it to a close, I know that you're a lover of books. Yeah. So I just by listening to you, I can tell, and also by also listening to some of your posts, and I'm a lover of books as well. I'm a lover of reading. And recently I'm getting into Audible books. So I'm a lover of listening, which is kind of cheating a little bit, I feel sometimes, but you get through things faster. So is there anything that you'd recommend if anybody's on this journey, or they maybe haven't started this journey yet? What would you recommend to read to kind of help you on the journey?
Well, the best emotional intelligence book, because there are several of them out there, I haven't read all of them yet. And the one that I find is the most impactful in the way it's written. Plus, it gives so many different strategies for application in our emotional intelligence growth, is Travis Bradbury and Jean Greaves. It's called Emotional Intelligence 2.0.
Oh, brilliant. And
yeah, the book itself is like pocket-sized book almost. What I appreciate the most about it is he just gets to the meat of like, look, these are four areas of emotional intelligence: your self-awareness, your self-management, your social awareness, and your relationship management. Now, let's just start with your emotional self-awareness. And this is what it is, and this is how it works. And here's 17 different strategies that you can start applying to grow your emotional self-awareness. Pick one, pick two, do all 17. If you only improve this area, your EQ will start to grow and things will be different for you. And so I like this book because it's easy to consume and easy to take action on. And when a topic like emotional intelligence comes into your present, it needs to be easily consumed and easy to apply. I think that's what really helps people to move forward and gain traction on it, because the word emotional in and of itself is a little bit of a deterrent for many people.
Yes, yes. God, that's bang on. I love that. I'm going to have to get that book, because I've got several. I've got the obvious ones, Daniel Goleman, and I've got John Ruskin as well. I love that book. Was really good for me personally, about emotional clearing.
Yeah.
And that's a really strong one. And Carl, so that's really good. So you've named the book a pocket-sized book, which is, can you just give us the title again, please, just for the audience and for me?
Emotional Intelligence 2.0, Travis Bradbury.
Lovely. 2.0, Travis Bradbury. Brilliant. I'm going to look that one up as well. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Teresa. It's been really insightful. I love your whole perception and the way you look at things. You know, you look at things very deeply. And I think it's just going to be a great sharing for me to able to share your work with my audience. So for that, I just want to say thank you.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Lovely. And from Talia the Communication Doctor and Teresa Quinlan, I'm just going to say, as I always say, adios.
One of my takeaways from Teresa is no one makes you feel anything. Stop giving away your power. Your power is really important. And the other thing that I felt was interesting is, you know, we as people control our emotional responses to things. And if you're aware of your emotional response, then you can change some of the behaviours, or just to be aware, you could have those conversations with your relationships, with your work colleagues, and all those different levels of interactions that you have every day. I also felt it was really interesting to tapping into that the younger Teresa and understanding her as a young person growing up, and understanding her journey with her mother and how that journey impacted her life, and she can look back on it as a reflection and now have a better relationship. So much to learn from that conversation. Thank you, Teresa.